News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 at 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. As we look over the news here this morning, there's a guy that's he's in the middle of about 9 stories, so we thought, why not get Jack Burrell on and talk about, well, we can just kind of have our choice, huh?
Yeah, and pleasure to be joined by the Fairhope City Council President, Jack Burrell, this morning. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Jack, let's just give everybody an idea of the commissions and elected positions that you have, and aside from having your full-time job.
Yeah, that's a pretty long list. So, city council, Fairhope Industrial Board, Fairhope Recreation Board, Fairhope Airport Authority, which we'll be talking about this morning, Eastern Shore Metropolitan Planning Organization Chairman, and I'm sure that Eastern Shore Sertoma Club, which is just a civic organization I belong to, and I know I'm leaving out a few right now.
That's what it says on the back of your baseball card. This is everything that he's involved
right,
in.
Right, yeah, very busy. And, Jack, you know, I need you to kind of explain this to me. What's going on with the Sonny Callahan Airport in Fairhope? A dispute with Continental Motors. Kind of lay out the situation with Continental Motors.
Well, I'll give you a little bit of background. Continental Motors has had a lease with the Fairhope Airport Authority for many, many years, and they perform a lot of their maintenance operations there. And they also they operate our FBO. That acronym is Fixed Base Operations, which means that they refuel aircraft, move aircraft around. They also lease out hangar space. We have a large hangar there that they utilize for aircraft storage, and then also some smaller, which you call T hangars. And they just run the general day-to-day operations of the municipal airport. And some time ago, last year, we addressed some of the deficiencies that they had in the lease with us. We asked them to address a number of things that they were deficient on, and I won't go into all those. There's a laundry list of those. And rather than just address those issues, they one of their vice presidents and counsel sent us a letter basically saying that they were going to terminate the lease, vacate the property on June the 30th of 2022, which would be this upcoming June 30th. And we mulled that over for a good while before we responded, and seeing that they didn't seem willing to address the deficiencies, we decided to go ahead and accept their offer to vacate the property on June the 30th of this year. And several weeks later, they reneged on that offer, said they were not going to offer that agreement, which we had in writing. And which we, you know, the Airport Authority in an open meeting had taken action to accept that offer to vacate the property. And then they backed out of that agreement. So because they did not honor that agreement, the Airport Authority filed a lawsuit to force them to honor that agreement. And then nothing happened. We thought that gave them plenty of time to take care of their business and plenty of time for us to take care of our business. And a few days ago, we heard from several of the tenants of the hangars, which we leased to Continental Motors, stating that if the Airport Authority does not dismiss the lawsuit, owner before the close of business on Monday, January 24th, basically they would be kicked out of their hangar space. So they put the local aviation community squarely in the middle of this legal dispute, which, you know, it made no sense. There was no rhyme or reason as to why these people should be getting kicked out of their leases. Well, what we believe is they wanted to just drive a wedge between the tenants the aviation community, and the Fairhope Airport Authority.
Sure.
I personally feel it was just silly, you know?
Yeah.
Jack, let me get this straight. They proposed this June 30th exit plan, right? And then
that was their proposal to us.
And then when you accepted it, then they changed it.
Correct. And then they said, "Oh no, we're not going to do that now." Hmm. And we were like, "Well, wait a minute. You know, we have an agreement for you to do that." And oh, by the way, you know, you still need to address all of these deficiencies, which you know you still haven't even addressed. Well, first you haven't acknowledged that they're deficiencies, and second, you haven't addressed them.
Are they operational deficiencies?
Well, I don't want to get into all the legalities of what they were. You know, we felt that they were some pretty major issues that they were not taking care of.
So,
and I guess I'm being a little cautious here because you know I'm not the airport attorney, and we are in a legal battle with this. Yeah. So I probably need to be a little bit measured about what I say.
We're talking with Fairhope City Council President Jack Burrell, who is also on the Fairhope Airport Authority Board. And, Jack, forgive me for my lack of knowledge regarding how exactly airports are run. So it's kind of like Continental Motors is like the property manager at the Fairhope Airport, and then they leased this hangar space out to 30 possibly locals who were keeping their planes there. Is that kind of how that runs?
Yeah, they are the leaseholder of certain portions of the airport. They don't control all of the airport property. In fact, we just completed about a $12 million excuse me guys, I'm feeling a little under the weather.
No problem.
But they are they control most of the west side of the airport. We have about a $12 million investment on the east side, which is under Fairhope Airport Authority control. So yes, they're one of many leaseholders of the airport.
Okay.
They have probably the vast majority of the property on the west side.
So they come up this out of the blue, it seems, but no airport joke intended. They came up with this January 24th date. What's the reaction been and I can imagine it's been pretty quick. What's the reaction been to those who are leasing the space?
Well, we happen to have had an airport authority this past Tuesday, and we went into executive session and we talked for a long time about what actions we could or should take, and then we came out back into the meeting and we voted to go ahead and we passed a resolution that fired back at Continental Motors and said, look, if you kick these people out on Thursday, or if you don't rescind this within a week, and I believe the date of the meeting was the 11th, so we gave them until close of business on January the 19th to rescind the threat of kicking everybody out of their spaces, that we would terminate their lease with us immediately.
Mm.
In other words, we're not going to wait until June 30th for you to vacate. We're going to terminate the lease immediately. So we'll see what happens. We'll see if they were just saber-rattling or if they mean business. We don't have any reason to believe that they weren't serious about their threat to kick everybody out. We certainly don't feel like the local aviation community should be used as pawns in a legal battle with Continental Motors. And, you know, I think that we need to look into the legalities of that. You know, Continental Motors is their parent corporation. Is a foreign corporation, and we definitely are going to talk to the feds and find out if they're violating any federal laws, and we're going to talk to the state and find out if they're violating state laws. You know, understand that the improvements to the Fairhope Airport are largely due to FAA grants, which are matched by state grants and then local funds. So the FAA has paid for up to 90% of the improvements at that airport. You know, I'm curious to know what they feel about 30 airplanes being kicked to the curb because, the airport exists for the benefit of the aviation community. That's why we are in existence, is to serve those people.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like they're being served very well at this moment.
Have you guys seen the letter
Yeah. I was looking at it earlier. It's you mean the letter from Continental to?
Yeah, the letter from, you know, Continental's, from Continental Motors.
And, right.
Heavy-handed? It's heavy-handed. And I get it. You know, they have attorneys and, you know, they have to get tough and they can look at it as business, but, you know, what's going on between the Airport Authority and Continental Motors over the lease and the deficiencies thereof and the fact that, they're not honoring the agreement that they made with us. In fact, a couple of agreements. First, the lease, and then secondly, the agreement to vacate the property. It's silly to include people that have nothing to do with
right.
it. For seemingly no other reason but for legal or political gain. I don't know if they thought they were going to turn the tide of public opinion against the Airport Authority. I don't know what their strategy was there, but, you know, we're not going to put up with it.
Yeah, have
they turned the tide at all? Have you felt that at all, Jay?
I can't speak for the 30 people, roughly 30 people that have been threatened to be kicked out of their hangar space. But I've talked to just a few of them, and the few that I talked to, it certainly did not turn the tide against us. Uh-huh. I think that they sympathize with the Fairhope Airport Authority, especially when we explain to them why we're taking the measures that we are taking. I think that they understand. I personally don't think that it's turned the tide. In fact, I think that has made Continental Motors a company that has a long history in the region. And unfortunately, I think that it's made them look bad.
Yeah, a very interesting story there. Hopefully it's ended without anyone being evicted from one of those hangar spaces. But Council President Burrell, we can't let you go without asking just a quick update on the I-10 bridge proposal. The big news, most recent news was that ALDOT and Cooper sent a letter to you and Mayor Sandy Stimson, who's of course leading the Mobile MPO, and said ALDOT, they don't see much of a problem with those proposals at all. What update do you have for us on that?
Well, you know, as you stated, so for the audience, they accepted, you know, all of the bullet points of the framework that we proposed to them, and it looks like they're putting together a plan to pursue all the aspects of the bullet points that we included, you know, but that was just, those were the points that we needed to make mm-hmm. to accept the plan. So they are moving forward with the plan. They will bring that back to us, and I don't know if that'll be, you know, 30, 60, 90 days. I would say probably, certainly within 90 days. We will put that back on our TIP, which is our Transportation Improvement Plan. And once we do that and approve that, I think in short order, you know, they'll get started on that. I'm sure there'll be a time by which they have to secure the financing. And, there'll be a lot of red tape that they have to take care of. But I think that'll be on the order of months, not years. And then I think you'll see the first shovel in the ground pretty soon. You know, whether that's 3 months afterwards or 6 months afterwards or a year, I put the order of the time in months.
Jack, thanks for all your time this morning. That gives us a good idea. Well, and the Continental issue had to be carefully explained.
You know, we have had a long relationship with them, and despite the legal battles, and despite the fact that, you know, we're having to get tough with them, you know, I know we do wish them well. We want business. We want local business. Although they do have a parent company that's owned by a foreign country, you know, they employ people locally, and unfortunately, we don't want to see the people that work locally to be impacted. So we are cognizant of that, and we do regret any impacts on people that work for them, that's for certain.
Thank you, Jack. Thanks for your time, and the explanation is well appreciated.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Fairhope City Council President Jack Burrell. And coming up, we'll turn up your voice, 251-343-0106. Yesterday, a bad day for the Biden administration. We'll discuss.
A lot of great information on Alabama politics on the way with the Jeff Poore Show beginning at 9 o'clock this morning. It's 826. Dan and Dalton. on Mobile Mornings.
You mentioned that a provocative interview yesterday on the Jeff Poore Show with gubernatorial candidate Tim James. We want to get into that this hour.
Yeah, we'll get into that after the news.
And also Biden and Kamala Harris's no good, rotten, stinking day they had yesterday with the Supreme Court strike down and also the Manchin and Sinema filibuster news. But I wanted to bring this story to everyone's attention here. So we know in these big cities that carjacking has become just, you know, rampant, widespread. Baltimore, Chicago especially, where gas stations are putting security guards at out by the pumps because so many people have been carjacked at their gas pumps. Philadelphia is seeing a lot of this too. But that's where sometimes concealed carry can be life-saving. And that's what happened recently here in the Fairmont area of Philadelphia, where a driver shot an alleged carjacker around midnight Tuesday. And he found himself face-to-face with the driver right there in Fairmont. They said the driver is a 32-year-old healthcare worker and was heading to perform a job for a person inside a residence. But the alleged carjacker approached the driver's door with a gun. The driver, who is a concealed carry permit holder, then opened fire. And he had quite a bit to say to ABC 6, including, I think, a really cool line. He might not have delivered it in the best of manners, but something you think of like some Clint Eastwood would say almost. Here is this guy who ended up shooting a carjacker.
I saw the gun. I thought he was going to shoot me and just take the car. So I retaliated as fast as I could, and just to see another day. You know, I had to shoot the guy. I was shaking up at first, and the police calmed me down a lot, and they made me feel real comfortable. Stay in school. Don't play with guns. Don't rob people. Work for what you want.
So a mix of like Stetson Bennett and Clint Eastwood there at the end. I think that line is great. Maybe not the delivery.
Stay in school. Don't play with guns. Don't rob people. Work for what you want.
Stay in school. Don't play with guns, don't rob people, and this guy saved his own life by being a concealed carry holder. By the way, the reporter there, I don't know if he was playing Candy Crush or what, all kinds of sounds going on his phone. Can you imagine? I know that we have listeners who have been in situations like that. I've never been in as hair-raising a situation as someone pointing a gun at me with intent, although responsible gun owners would say any time a gun is pointed at someone, it's technically with intent. You don't do that. But to have someone trying to jack your car, and you never know if they're going to let you off, you know, healthy, that they're just going to take your car and not kill you. So this guy acted quickly and was able to save his own life potentially. But what a line. Don't play with guns. Stay in school. Don't rob people.
Yeah, that's like, here are my three tips, right? So I had a gun pulled on me.
Really?
Yeah, I had a shift change at a hotel in Athens, working there when I was, you know, pretty young. And, I mean, you know, 20, 21 maybe. Not only did I have to deal with the guy pointing the gun at me, I had the coworker who we were changing shifts out became hysterical.
Oh, wow.
So I had to calm her down to keep the situation from getting crazy.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that I'm any hero, because those things happen so quick. And actually, her losing her cool probably took the attention away. You know, it probably allowed me to know I had to act quickly with her.
Right, yeah.
To calm her down. And that way, and the guy was kind of over the, jumped over the counter, got the money and left.
Wow.
So I know the feeling a little bit, but it was colored in with her losing her stuff altogether.
Yeah.
It's 8:30 FM Talk 106.5 with Dan and Dalton.
Morning, 8:34 on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Congratulations. We made it to Friday. Right now it's time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Now if we had that, you know, 70 to 80 degree weekend, nice and weather, it'd be great.
It would be nice, but the weather does not look that great this weekend. We're going to have some rain, going to have some cold weather and windy weather. Thankfully for us, McConnell has vehicles on the lot who can drive through any kind of weather.
That's right. We've got some great deals on some four-wheel drive trucks and stuff. And don't forget now, you know, since it's going to be raining this weekend, you have that unfortunate accident. Don't forget McConnell Collision. Man, we got the greatest body shop in Mobile. Don't want to toot our horn, but we got some great folks back there, Thomas and all them. They'll take care of all your insurance needs and everything, and just come see us or give them a call, 251-476-4141.
And still buying cars?
Yes, sir. Call Gene. That number, again, 251-476-4141. Give him the VIN, the miles, and Gene will give you a price right over the phone. And we've been buying a few cars off the street now, and which is a great deal because they're tough getting them at the auction right now. And we're just having success at that, so mm-hmm. we're going to keep on going with that.
Yeah, and folks can check those out online, McConnellAutomotive.com. Thank you, Louie.
That's right. Thank you.
Louie Arata, you'll find him at McConnell on Dolphin Street just east of I-65.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 836. So Tim James now in the governor's race.
Mm-hmm.
What do we have now? We've got Lou
Burdett. Seven. Wow. And I started a poll yesterday, and on our website, it's also on our Facebook page. If the primary election were today, who would have your vote for governor of Alabama? And initially, I only included five candidates. That number's up to six because quite a few people said that they're looking forward to voting for Lou Burdett. I did not include Dave Thomas. I'm not sure how many votes he would have received. But so far, looking at the poll, Jim Ziegler, the winner on the website. He's got 38% of the vote. Tim James picking up 23%. And right now, Governor Kay Ivey and Lindy Blanchard tied with 15% of the vote. So those of you that were able to make it over to the website and vote have Ivey tied with Lindy Blanchard, but Ziegler and Tim James, the big vote getters on our little FM Talk 106. I shouldn't say little. On our FM Talk 106.5. Governor's poll.
So Tim James came out swinging. His campaign kicking off at the steps of the Capitol building on
Wednesday,
and got our attention. Like, whoa! It sounded a little bit. Some of the content sounded a little bit dated. If I can say that, but full of passion
for
sure.
You can't swan dive into a race like this. You got a cannonball. And that's exactly what Tim James did.
He nuked. And among those he nuked were Republicans already in office talking about the state of education in Alabama right now and why it is what it is.
And you ask yourself, what in the heck have these people been doing or paying attention to over these years? And the only thing I can figure is all they have cared about is pushing 9 casinos, pushing gambling, pushing medical marijuana. They raised gas taxes so that when people, every time you fill up with buy a gallon of gas, just remember you're paying more in taxes. And yet they evidently just ignored the educational situation, and it's not a secret.
I thought it was interesting. Todd Stacey, who was a guest with Jeff yesterday from Alabama Daily News, was saying it's almost like he's setting himself up more for a U.S. Senate race. And here's now the education being one thing. But he was also, and he's not, he's running for governor, to be clear, but he's making a big deal out of some of these culture wars.
Yeah.
He just feels like, Alabama, the citizenry of Alabama, very conservative, very Christian. Are we being represented that way in Montgomery?
Mm-hmm.
And he says he feels like a lot of the Republicans who are in office right now, it's interesting. He's not really, it's almost like he's not bashing Democrats because a Democrat will act like a Democrat, right? And he's not worried about filling out that scorecard.
Yeah, he's calling many of the Republicans rhinos, basically.
Exactly. So here's what he had to say about Republicans in the state of Alabama kind of losing their compass.
When I see some of the legislation that is coming out of Montgomery, which is supposed to be the most conservative state in the union in terms of gambling, this marijuana scam, this bait and switch they call the Compassionate Act about medical marijuana, which is nothing but about peddling a pot on the street disguised as medicine. I mean, this is being done by the Republican majority, not the Democrats.
There you go. So that's Tim James speaking, and his. It'll be interesting to follow his campaign as it goes along here, because that would be like a 9-run first inning he had in terms of getting your attention.
It's crazy how he is right in one aspect, that socially the country has moved left in a very, very quick manner.
Yep.
I mean, just think, how long ago was it that those that wanted to legalize marijuana for recreational use were considered the farthest of left.
Mm-hmm.
Even gay marriage. We weren't talking about, you know, trans and different pronouns and things of that nature. It was less than two decades ago that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were both anti-gay marriage.
Yeah.
And think if anyone came out and said that now. Now, there are politicians, but even if, you know, Ted Cruz came out and said he's against gay marriage, he would have a lot of people in his own base say, dude, what are you talking about? You're off your rocker. But 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were saying the same thing. I think there is a role in a race like this for someone who is a hardline social conservative.
Right.
There are a lot of people who will say, and I've said it plenty of times in the past, that they're fiscally conservative and socially liberal. I've kind of had to change my tune after these last couple of years.
You're not that
like,
liberal.
It's like, wow,
yeah.
How far are we going to go with this thing?
Well, go to a University of Pennsylvania swim meet, and you'll know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we do have a lot of people who've texted, and I'm sure texting right now that Tim James is, that he's, well, some people feel he's fake, that he doesn't necessarily believe in what he's saying.
Okay, I'm just saying that's not a bad observation, and keep that in mind.
It's possible that this is all for show, but I don't know. I would need to talk with Jeff and some folks who watched some of Tim James' previous gubernatorial campaigns, and was he kind of in that same lane that he's taking right now? I also think this takes some of the air out of Jim Ziegler's potential race. You know, Jim Ziegler was coming in. He was supposed to be the outsider fighting against the Ivey administration every step of the way, anti-gas tax all the way, anti-toll on the bridge. Ziegler was kind of, I think, filling that outsider role as much as you can be an outsider when you're facing some of these other Republicans in a primary like this. But Tim James came in, and like I said, he cannonballed in the pool. He's taking some of the things that Jim Ziegler has said, some of his attacks on the Ivey administration, and amping it up 10 or 20 times what Ziegler was saying.
Yeah, and obviously Tim James probably, well, first of all, he ran for governor back in 2010, and so he's got a better understanding of you know, what this all going to entail, and also he's got more money.
Mm-hmm.
So those two facts can't be denied.
And then how does Lindy play into this? I mean, she jumped into the Senate race, $5 million of her own cash injected into her campaign.
Then did something that you should not do when you're running for Senate. She went into the witness protection program. We couldn't get a hold of her.
Yeah, as she sat on her $5 million, Katie Britt signs began popping up across the entire state. She began visiting every single county. And Lindy Blanchard kind of just faded into the background in that race. So she jumped into the gubernatorial race, I guess expecting a Trump endorsement. And as far as I know, Trump still hasn't jumped into the gubernatorial race here. And Lindy, you know, is she even I don't know how much of that money she's been spending. It seems like maybe she's sitting on it without intending to spend it if things keep going in this direction.
Yeah, and I guess because Mo Brooks was already got the Trump endorsement for Senate, there was no way that that was going to change.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like a deal was made, maybe. That she, look, you run for governor, I'll come out for you, and I'll give you the old Trump endorsement. It hasn't happened yet.
Meanwhile, what does Ivey need to do to win re-election and win it going away so that there's no runoff? I don't think she needs to quite kneel on the ball. I don't think the game is over. But she really just kind of has to not screw up, right, according to all the polling we've seen. And I'm always surprised when those news stories come out that Ivey is like the 10th most popular governor in Alabama. It's because the rest of the state doesn't necessarily feel the same way that we do here in Mobile and Baldwin counties. But a lot of people like Governor Kay Ivey and what she's done in office. And you saw it in her State of the State address the other night. She doesn't really have to go too far out of the lane she's already occupied. Like yesterday, she right after the Supreme Court made their ruling against the vaccine mandate for private employers, Ivey came out and said, She applauded the decision, and that's kind of just what she has to do all the way through. We saw it through the pandemic. She was kind of following other Republicans' governor's lead. She doesn't need to step out and be some trendsetter as a governor as long as she stays in the mostly conservative, you know, I've said lane plenty of times, but as long as she stays within those parameters, then she'll more than likely sail through. But I think Tim James making quite a bit of news here over these last few days.
I think maybe not for the rest of the state, but for this part of the state, since we're right next to the Florida Panhandle, I think that, you know, Ivy loses points on the gas tax, first of all. She loses points on the Bayway, for sure. And she probably, around here, for conservatives, loses points when you compare her
to DeSantis.
To DeSantis.
Exactly.
Right, yeah. Next door, because he's been a lot more proactive with, you know, the way he's run the state through all of it. A very populated state, unlike Alabama, and the way he's run the state and kept it open for business, where Ivy was a little more tentative with that.
Which, by the way, I was talking with Jeff the other day about, I think there's a New York Times editorialist who put out a feeler for whether people would vote for a Biden-Cheney 2024 ticket, pulling the Republican Liz Cheney over as his vice president, which sounds insane. Two of the most unliked people in politics. But I've also seen a push for maybe a DeSantis and Tulsi Gabbard ticket. What does everyone think of that? A DeSantis-Gabbard ticket going into 2024.
Now, it's been a while since we've heard from Gabbard.
She actually spoke out quite a bit on Twitter just a couple days ago about vaccine mandates. And she's been very vocal, and she's been tearing into Hillary Clinton even still. Remember, that's kind of what pushed Gabbard out of contention very early on in the last election, was because Hillary came after her with the full weight of the, you know, Clinton team there. But I don't know. Tell us on the text line. Would you vote for a DeSantis-Gabbard ticket, or just by having someone Democrat in name, is that a no-go for you in 2024, Gabbard being a Democrat?
Interesting. Okay, so tell you what, we will let you know who Jeff's got on the show, by the way, coming up. Also, we've got, what do we have here?
Well, the Supreme Court decision from yesterday was huge, and Kamala Harris just over and over again sticking her foot in her mouth. One of the worst interviews I've seen from Kamala yesterday.
847 FM Talk 106.5 with Dan and Dalton. Good morning, y'all. It is Mobile Mornings, and we've got more on the way next. Good morning from Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. Look over the Supreme Court decision from yesterday. Maybe also one of the poorest interviews in the history of the United States. We've got C.J. Pearson on the Jeff Show at 9:30 today. He's a conservative commentator. Dan Roberts, state senator, at 10 o'clock. Alabama Today's April Marie Fogle is at 10:30. Sean Ross is from the Katie Britt campaign. He's on at 11 o'clock and 11:30. State Senator Chris Elliott, all part of Jeff's show today on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, and if you've been texting us, think we might be having a problem with the text line. I sent a test text myself, and it hasn't made it through yet. So we'll let you know when that's working again. This must be what it was like in the old days of radio. It's just me and you, Dan. Yeah. Just me and you talking now. No texts coming in.
Just a terrible show.
Very odd. No, I don't think it's a terrible show. No, I just think
awful.
Some technical difficulties. Now, no, awful is what happened yesterday for the Biden administration. I'm not sure. You might have to step back a little bit to appreciate how thoroughly embarrassing yesterday was on many different levels for the entirety of the Biden administration. I mean, first off, you had SCOTUS come out and shoot down the private business vaccine mandate. That was a 6-3 vote. The three completely ill-informed or maybe intentionally misleading justices, Kagan, Meyer, and Sotomayor, they were all the dissenting votes there, or they wanted the mandate to roll on. So
that affects 84 million workers, by the way.
Huge. And, you know, the six conservative, although not all, I realize not all Roberts, many people don't consider conservative. And maybe soon, who was it that went against it yesterday? Gorsuch,
yeah,
right?
They went with the, they kept the.
So the healthcare mandate stayed installed.
It's in place, right?
And that's 10 million healthcare workers affected by that. And now they're sending military in to assist some of these hospitals and cities where they've fired healthcare workers for not being vaccinated. And then you have other cities where they're bringing positive tested healthcare workers back because they don't have enough people to work. The entire thing just makes zero sense from the top down. So that one stays in, but the private business mandate gone away. So that was bad news for the Biden administration. You also had Kyrsten Sinema come out and say, no means no, basically. I'm not I'm not voting to change the filibuster rule.
Yeah, she obviously thinks that, you know, we can't, that's there as a firewall. We can't change that. I'm not going to change it. She doubled down.
And I don't know if you saw Tom Cotton, the senator from Arkansas the other day, delivered a full speech on the Senate floor, but it was all from a Chuck Schumer speech from years back railing against modifying the filibuster rule.
Yep.
Genius move from Tom Cotton.
Yep.
So you had the SCOTUS ruling. You had Sinema come out and say she's not going to vote to change the filibuster. You had Manchin come out later that night and say the same thing. And you had Biden, who I don't know why his staff puts him in these situations, but he went to meet with the Democrats to push them in to voting to change the filibuster. And then he came out and spoke with the press. And he was – I mean, he had absolutely lost his marbles. He was completely upset. Here was Biden yesterday when he left that meeting and was talking about how things are going with his push to change the filibuster and get that voting election reform moved through. Let's see if I can grab Biden here. My page jumped on me. All right, here's Biden yesterday who, first off, he doesn't know if he's talking into a live mic or not. Here you go.
This is about complicated subjects like, can you get this done? I hope we can get this done. The honest to God answer is, I don't know whether we can get this done. Is this mic on? I guess, anyway. And well, I'm not sure either. But anyway, I hope we can get this done. But I'm not sure. But one thing for certain, like every other major civil rights bill that came along, if we missed the first time, we could come back and try it a second time. We missed this time. We missed this time. And the state legislative bodies continue to change the law, not as to who can vote, but who gets to count the vote. Count the vote. Count the vote. It's about election subversion, not just whether or not people get to vote. Who counts the vote? That's what this is about. That's what makes this so different than anything else we've ever done. I don't know that we can get it done, but I know one thing. As long as I have a breath in me, as long as I'm in the White House, as long as I'm engaged at all, I'm going to be fighting to change the way these legislatures have moving. Thank you.
That was Biden yesterday and didn't take questions.
Does passion automatically make you right?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just checking.
And it also apparently didn't change the minds of Sinema or Manchin. So at some point you'd start wondering, you know, is the president all right? Do we need to start maybe thinking about who is next in line? Well, if you were hoping for a President Kamala Harris to come in and save the day, she's still delivering embarrassing interviews. Listen to this. I mean, home field here. She had home field advantage. She was on NBC's Today Show. But the interviewer here, Craig Melvin, he didn't really take it easy on her. But listen to this answer. And I know Tucker Carlson shredded this last night. He asks about a change of course for the Biden administration. And listen to her non-answer. It's one for the ages.
There as necessary and as
just
needed.
Just a second.
At what point does the administration say, you know what, this strategy isn't working. We're going to change strategies. Six former administration officials last week wrote that open letter urging the administration to change course, to change strategy. Is it time?
It is time for us to do what we have been doing, and that time is every day. Every day it is time for us to agree that there are things and tools that are available to us to slow this thing down.
That,
can you describe
the time is today to do what we have been doing, and the time is today. And that's what we're doing today.
And tell them what my face looked like during
shock. So unprepared.
That's the first time I heard that, and I actually did the dog tilting his head. At Dalton, like, oh.
She's just unprepared for basic questions. It's crazy.
Yeah. Thank you, Dalton. Dalton hates liberals. It's a Friday morning staple on FM Talk 106.5. Dan and Dalton and Jeff Poore is on the way next.